Welcome to Innovation Hub. I'm Kara Miller. Some of my favorite experiences have happened when I've been traveling, and particularly traveling to French-speaking countries. I don't speak French well, I speak it-ish. But it's enough to order from a menu, or to kind of understand a news report, or to eavesdrop terribly on everyone around me, which I always do. I'm just good enough at French, I think, to feel like I can slip into an alternate world, which is like my world, only it's a little more exotic. There's now an argument, though, that in the 21st century, learning languages is going to be passé. Soon, technology will translate everything for you. So what kids need to learn are cultures, and Americans aren't great at doing that. Ian Bremmer has made this very argument. He is the president of the Eurasia Group and an editor at large for Time magazine, and he's the author of a LinkedIn article called Why You Should Learn Cultures. Ian, thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
So I think a lot of people who have young kids think, quick, we got to get them into Spanish immersion, we got to get them into Mandarin immersion. Why is learning cultures now so important?
Well, look, don't get me wrong. I mean, it'd be great if everyone had 8 and 10, 12 languages that they could use. It's very impressive and people appreciate it. But the fact is that language translation technology is almost real-time streaming right now. And by this time, these kids are older, everyone's going to have them, and that's the way we're going to communicate. But that doesn't put you inside the head of the other person, and it doesn't help you communicate, right? I mean, communication is something that people that have the same language have difficulty with. And what you really want to be successful in life is you want the ability for your relationships to be fruitful with as many disparate peoples as humanly possible. And in a world where the United States is no longer driving all the outcomes, it really behooves you then to say, okay, what is it that make the Chinese tick in a negotiation? What is it that they want? How is it that they live their lives? What are their priorities? And understanding that, no matter how well you speak Chinese, understanding that's going to get you a very long way. And I think that's the more you can immerse young people in different ways of thinking, I think the better off they're really going to be in a world where that's going to be one of the most important skills you have.
Okay, so let me ask you about that. You talked about understanding how the Chinese tick. Well, before I learned much about Chinese culture, I didn't know the concept of, for example, saving face, which is really important in China and in Chinese culture. But isn't language part of the way to understand culture? You know that there are languages that describe love in very different ways. There are languages that describe shame and, you know, in very different ways than English categorizes those things and breaks them down. And that gives you some insight into, I guess the Russians must really think about love in very different categories than we do, or whatever it is.
Well, you know, look, I mean, I'll give you an example that makes your point and not mine, which is I speak Russian, and I think it's very interesting. In the United States, so many things are so narcissistic. I'm cold. I'm in love. Where in Russian, it's «Мне холодно». It is cold to me. Things, you are not a principal actor in Russia. You get bounced around by society. And Russian history will tell you that. But look, the way that kids learn languages in this country, they're going to classes and they're picking it up and they're not getting immersed.
They're conjugating verbs.
Exactly. It's one more topic. And I mean, I did that with Latin lessons when I was a kid, and I didn't teach me much about Latin culture. What we need is travel. What we need is immersion. What we need is to stop living in planned communities and in walled off areas of town where we're only hanging out with people that are just like us, which we also do virtually in Facebook. That's the problem. But everything in society and culture that's happening right now is pushing us more towards things that are familiar to us that we like. That is the antithesis of understanding others. So what I'm arguing here is I'm not trying to say that it's stupid to learn languages, though I do think the amount of time people put in to learn languages can be really, really sped up in a world where you are going to have the ability to pick up anything from another culture and language just with your device. But you need to instead be using those devices to get you closer to people that actually hold those different views.
Let me ask, let me make sure I understand the technology here, because your argument is when kids who are 5 years old, 8 years old right now are grown up, we're going to have awfully good technology for language translation. So explain to me what that looks like when somebody in 20 years or whatever goes on a business trip to Brazil. What does that technology look like and how does it kick in for them in their, you know, practically?
Well, look, right now, my ability to engage on social media with a much greater number of people from all over the world who send out a tweet that has my name in it, and aside from that, it's in Hungarian or it's in Swedish or it's in Romanian, and it says, do you want to translate this? And I do, and it's pretty good. I can actually understand it. And in 10 years' time, it's not just pretty good, it's seamless. And not just that, but, you know, any research you want to do, any meeting you want to have, you don't need to have a translator with you. Your device is your real-time translator, and it's basically simultaneous. So you're carrying on a seamless conversation with someone from another country who doesn't speak your language. The barrier is much more cultural than linguistic. That barrier is going to persist. There is no computer out there that is being developed to try to help you understand and get immersed in that culture. And that's the problem. That's what you need to still put your work into.
So you feel like people are going to be in business meetings in 20 or 30 years or sooner, and the translation technology is going to be so good that basically in real time they're carrying on that meeting even though they don't speak each other's languages.
Well, you know, I went to the Microsoft CEO Summit last spring, and they did a, you know, sort of beta test for us of a real-time conversation between someone sitting there in Redmond and someone in Germany, and it was extraordinary. I mean, you know, obviously it's not quite ready for live at time, and I don't know what that means, what they need to accomplish to make it happen, but they demonstrated the project that people were talking as they would, and it worked. I would hate to be a simultaneous translator. If that's your skill set, you better be picking up another one in another 10 or 20 years, because you're not necessary.
So if learning cultures, then, is what's really important, can you do that in school? I mean, what does a class look like where you're not working on saying, I go, I went, I will go, and instead you're learning about what makes people tick?
Well, culture can, of course, be taught, and you do have classes in it as you learn more about the world and as you read more about the world. But it's much more about your parents. It's much more about what they expose you to. So, you know, one, they can teach you. Two, they might have the inclination. Three, get the kids out. Get them out of the house. You know, it's to learn other cultures. We live in the kind of country you don't have to actually travel all over the world to learn about another culture. We have, you know, sort of all sorts of enclaves of people with dramatically different perspectives right in our hometowns.
And you don't see this as an issue of financial stratification to some degree, that, you know, people who are middle class, upper middle class, are much more able to say, hey, you want to do your junior year abroad in Costa Rica? You can do it. Or you want to see what life is like on a kibbutz in Israel? You can do it. And there's a lot of people who are not going to be able to say that, not because they don't want to, but just because they can't.
Oh, I mean, look, there's certainly a financial stratification. I mean, look, if you're in the 0.1%, there's a really good chance that you've traveled internationally a lot before you, you know, sort of get out of the gate. You probably had vacations like that. I was in the projects. My vacations when I was a kid, we all got in a 72 Pinto and we drove down to Virginia without air conditioning in the middle of the summer. And I love that trip, but I probably didn't get as much culturally as, you know, the kids that were in Phillips Academy in Andover. So, you know, definitely you have advantages, as in everything in life, if you're in the 1%. But my God, this is a country. We don't have really poor people in this country. We have people that are wealthy or extraordinarily wealthy. I'm talking from the global perspective. There is no excuse in this country not to learn other cultures, not given our history, not given where we've come from, not given the adversity that we had to go through to actually get here. I think it's absolutely critical, and I don't think I'm talking to the 1%. They don't need this conversation. I think I'm talking to every person.
Okay, then give me two cultures that you would want to learn more about yourself.
Well, I'll tell you cultures I find most fascinating. I've been to over 100 countries in the world. Bhutan is definitely right up there, in part because they're one of the least globalized cultures I've ever met. When the new king took over from his father, well, his father was still alive, before he did, he did a walking tour of the country and personally met over one-third of his entire population. And they are really focused on everything about what makes that community tick. And it is so different from the way we live our lives. If I ever decide to take a year and just get out, that's where you can't find me. I'll be in Bhutan.
Okay.
The second one has to be China, because I'm being practical here. You know, on the one hand, it's very nice to learn other cultures. But on the other hand, if you don't learn the Chinese culture, increasingly, they're going to be able to say no in ways that hurt us. And so it's not just about what's nice. It's about what's actually important. They're going to be able to impose their authority on companies and on countries and on peoples the way that we have historically. I will also say that I go to China, you know, a couple times a year. There are over 1 billion people right now, probably on balance, have more patriotism and more sense of support for their government, which they didn't vote for. It's an authoritarian state, than we do here in the United States. And, you know, look, 35 years of 10% plus state-developed growth will do that for you. But we need to understand that. We need to understand what makes them tick, because it is not the same sense of freedom of speech, and I need to have the right to have a gun. That doesn't play over there. It's very different. And I'm not saying it's better, and Lord knows I wouldn't prefer to live there, but I do think it really behooves me to understand it.
Ian Bremmer is president of Eurasia Group, and he's also the author of Superpower. Ian, thank you so much. This is a great conversation.
My pleasure.
We have posted Ian Bremmer's article on why learning cultures is more important than learning languages. That's on our Facebook page, facebook.com/innovationhubradio.